Well, thank you everyone for coming. My name is Senator Matt Klein, and I serve as the chair of the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. I'm really proud of the work we've done in the state of Minnesota in the last 2 years to empower Minnesotans to establish a safer, fairer marketplace, to empower people to make informed decisions about how and where to spend their hard-earned money, and to protect themselves from scams and fraudsters. We passed the Minnesota Debt Fairness Act, we regulated payday lending, we enhanced student loan borrower protections, and much more, but we can't do that alone. And for the past 15 years, we've had a strong partner in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, an independent federal agency that was established in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis and the Great Recession. The CFPB regulates banks and it prevents deceptive trade practices. It receives and addresses consumer complaints. It offers financial education. It monitors risks in the market and much more. And since its inception, the CFPB has returned $20 billion for over 200 million Americans. But in the last 2 weeks, the Trump administration and Elon Musk's team of hackers have gone to work gutting the CFPB. Musk's team gained access to private data, payment systems, research, human resources, and more. They took down the website for CFPB, deleted it, and installed themselves. The Director of Office and Management and Budget, who is a Project 2025 author, ordered CFPB employees to stop work and rejected agency funding from the Federal Reserve. That is why we had a hearing today in the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee to highlight what is occurring and to see how the state of Minnesota can continue to protect ordinary Minnesotans from financial fraud and exploitation, even with the loss of this federal support. We've discovered that if you have a credit card, a mortgage, a student loan, if you owe medical debt, if you use virtual currency, or you even have an account with a big bank, these actions from the Trump administration can place you at risk. We need our colleagues in the legislature here and our federal delegation to stand up for consumers against unelected billionaires who are trying to remove any safeguards from big banks, corporate finance giants, and tech industries. We cannot let the fox guard the henhouse. We're very grateful in this work to have the partnership of our great Attorney General in the state of Minnesota. And I'll turn it over to Attorney General Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Ellison here. I've been watching the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from the very beginning. When I was a freshman legislator, the foreclosure crisis was raging. You could see the effects just by driving through my North Minneapolis neighborhood. So when I got to Congress, I went to the chairman of the committee and said, let's have some hearings right in the city of Minneapolis. We did have some at the Central Library. We heard from all kinds of people who were defrauded, who were sold no-doc, low-doc loans, who got stated income loans, who thought they were going to get refinances that would lower their monthly payments, but actually they went up, and it happened in numerous occasions. They were seniors. There were people who spoke English as a second language, who signed documents in English. It was a mess. But in all of the trouble, in all of the 3 million foreclosures that happened all over the country and the massive unemployment that happened as a result of it, one of the most important things that the CFPB does is it provides bank supervision to large banks. Now, under the law, it is the Federal Reserve Bank that provides that same supervision for small banks, community banks, and state chartered banks, and gives that sort of regulation. So they're regulated, but the big banks are not. And there's no one, not the state attorney general or anyone else, who can provide that kind of supervision, which means that large, systemically important banks are operating in an unregulated fashion right now. And the last time that happened, the results were catastrophic. And so I am quite concerned because I remember being at a hearing where we were asking executives at Wells Fargo about why there were proliferation of accounts that consumers never asked for, why they had all these accounts and credit cards that people said they never even heard about, and what was the how was this allowed to happen? Well, the fact is we haven't seen that recently because the CFPB, using its supervisory authority, put a stop to it. Without the CFPB, you have banks that some of whom have a long history of being in trouble with the law, now completely unregulated, and that should scare every single American. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Liz Bolden. I serve in the Senate representing District 25, which is Rochester, Orinoco, and areas north of Rochester. I'm really proud of the work that we have done and are continuing to do in relation to medical debt. Medical debt is not like other debt. It is not something people decide to do like a business loan or a car loan. People don't plan to have extended hospital stays or heart attacks or have their gallbladder burst. That's why we shouldn't treat medical debt the same as other debt. Medical debt is the number one reason why Americans go into bankruptcy. If you travel 6 hours to the north and talk to Canadians about that, they will look at you like you have two heads. That is why last year we took significant action to help Minnesotans burdened with medical debt. In 2024, we passed the Minnesota Debt Fairness Act in collaboration with Attorney General Keith Ellison. And most of its provisions went into effect into state law last October. The law included numerous protections for Minnesotans struggling with medical debt, and I want to talk about a few of those. It included prohibiting medical debt from being reported to credit bureaus, protecting patients' good credit. It stopped the automatic transfer of medical debt from one spouse to another automatically. Minnesota was one of the very few states who did that, and medical debt was the only debt we treated that way. That is no longer the case. It allows patients who successfully defend medical debt lawsuits to have their attorney's fees paid. It requires medical providers to publish their collection practices, just transparency of what their practices are. It bans providers from withholding necessary health care due solely to unpaid debt. It limits wage garnishment practices and extends protections to everyone living and working in Minnesota. It creates processes for patients to dispute billing errors. It established new medical debt collection rights and strengthened protections against predatory collection tactics. And it expands bankruptcy protections and shields more property from collection. In early January, the CFPB published its own rule prohibiting unpaid medical debt from appearing on people's credit reports, despite objections from the three big U.S. credit reporting entities, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. Now, the Trump administration is bowing to their demands, rendering that protection obsolete for a large part of the country. On average, the inclusion of medical debt reduces credit scores by 20 points, which is significant. It's estimated that 22,000 new mortgages would likely be approved each year if this rule was in place nationwide. This means that through no fault of their own, folks struggling to pay back medical debt are locked out of a major pathway to financial stability, further exacerbating their financial struggles. An estimated 22.8 million people are expected to have at least one medical collection removed from their credit reports after the three nationwide consumer reporting companies announced removal of the medical collections under $500 from consumer credit reports in April of 2023. And I want to be clear, while the Trump administration is dismantling protections for people across the country, in Minnesota, because of the Debt Fairness Act that we passed previously, Minnesotans are protected from that. Still in Minnesota, medical debt cannot be reported against people's credit scores because we know it is not like other debt. It is not, medical debt is not an accurate representation of people's credit worthiness. And so, again, I'm really proud of the work that we have done here in Minnesota, and we will continue that work. With that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Senator Seeberger.
I'm Judy Seeberger, and I have the honor of representing folks in District 41, and I live in Afton. In the wake of the 2008 financial crisis and the Great Recession, millions of hardworking Americans lost their jobs, their homes, and their savings. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created to prevent the unethical, dangerous, and predatory actions that caused so much pain and suffering for working-class Americans. The dismantling of this agency will only make another recession more likely and the scamming of everyday Americans more certain. The Bureau does crucial work to catch fraudulent services that are advertised falsely. One example of this came last year when Brightspeed Solutions, a third-party payment processor, knowingly facilitated payments for companies that tricked consumers into buying expensive and unnecessary antivirus software and services. In many cases, seniors and older adults, and those with little knowledge on the subject were targeted. The CFPB's lawsuit was able to recoup over $53 million for over 120,000 consumers, many of which had no idea that they had even been scammed. Things like this will become more commonplace if the CFPB is dismantled. In 2023, I authored a bill that capped payday lending rates and invested in alternatives to help Minnesotans break the payday lending debt cycle. A new rule from the CFPB regarding payday lending was set to go into effect nationwide in March. This rule would prevent lenders from collecting payments from people's bank accounts in ways that rack up excessive fees. Now, those protections are in jeopardy, if already not completely obsolete. The CFPB has also instituted limits on credit card late fees and overdraft charges. These rules are estimated to save U.S. consumers about $15 billion per year. Currently, the average overdraft fee is $35. The new rules would cap them at $5, or whatever cost is incurred. These savings are estimated to be over $200 per household each year. Similarly, credit card late fees would be capped at $8 per month, compared to the current averages of $30 on the first late payment and $41 on subsequent late payments. These are protections that help our most vulnerable friends, neighbors, and families. Quite simply, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau stands up for working-class Americans, folks who don't have the ability to file a lawsuit against giant banks and credit card companies. The reality is that you might not even know when you've become a victim of these predatory financial practices. Without the CFPB, we are all vulnerable. We must stand up to protect it. And I'm going to pass it to my colleague, Senator Umu Verbaeten.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Claire Umu Verbaeten. I represent District 66 in the Minnesota Senate, and I also serve as an assistant majority leader. Last year, my bill to strengthen student loan protections was signed into law. I'm very proud of that. It was a crucial step forward for Minnesota students and families, helping them navigate the complex world of student loan repayment with better protections and oversight. And the CFPB plays a pivotal role in consumer protection at the federal level. It ensures that student loan servicers and other financial institutions follow the law, act fairly, and protect borrowers from fraud or mistreatment. And so with the CFPB shutting down, that's going to hurt Minnesota's efforts to safeguard student loan borrowers. We were able to put in those protections for the Department of Commerce to get additional reporting, for the Attorney General to go after those folks, and for students themselves to take action and sue companies for that mistreatment. But we all need to work collaboratively, and we need our partners at the federal government to help us. So this is certainly a scary time. I also want to say that the federal oversight that the CFPB provides supports data collection, enforcement, consumer advocacy that, you know, we would struggle to match. They investigate unfair practices, act against bad actors, and really ensure that borrowers are treated equitably. I think without this agency, we're going to have fewer resources to monitor and hold servicers accountable for improper practices, such as mismanagement of loans or illegal debt collection methods. And, you know, the consequences for our borrowers could be immediate and severe. Folks are just trying to pay off their debt, but they're often steered onto the wrong plans. There's call deflection schemes that they face. Their payments are mismanaged or not tracked. They're trying to do the right thing, but when servicers act in these predatory ways, we have to be able to hold them accountable. And for many who are just trying to get by and make these payments, sort of similar to what Senator Seeberger said, they may not even know that should not be happening to them in the first place. So this really could result in more confusion, financial hardship, and a greater risk of falling into default for students already struggling to make ends meet. Again, our law will still exist, but we really need our partners at the federal level to help us. The CFPB is so important for enforcing consumer protections, and shutting it down would risk undermining the very progress that we've made here in Minnesota, and unfortunately leaving our students vulnerable again. Thank you.
We can take any questions.
It's been suggested by some at the federal level that the states should just step in and do some of this enforcement. Can you explain whether it's feasible to add more resources to fill those gaps? Whoever wants to take that.
I can probably team take that with the Attorney General. We heard from our Commerce Department today that their staffing is fairly small in comparison to the tremendous resources of the Federal Consumer Protection Bureau, and similarly in the Attorney General's office. Attorney General also pointed out that he just simply doesn't have jurisdiction over the big banks who are the essential culprits in the 2008 financial crisis. So we'll certainly do our best. We take it as our mission and our creed to protect Minnesotans, but we are out-resourced in this one. Attorney General.
That's right. There is the issue of just the volume of scams and schemes. We just don't have the staff to make up the gap. But then the CFPB has regulatory and supervisory responsibilities that we don't have. They have supervisory responsibilities to delve into certain practices that we do not have the jurisdiction. We can't issue the subpoena. We cannot do that kind of discovery on the large federally chartered banks. That is the job of the CFPB, and without them, it is ringing the dinger diller. It is ringing the dinner bell on the American consumer. Yeah.
It sounds like between the Senator Bolden, your bill on debt fairness and every protection that was added on student loan borrowers, that is it safe to say that Minnesota, because of those protections, is better off because they're not devoid of any avenue for people to, have a complaint or, the protection certainly in your bill, Senator Bolden?
I think that's true to some degree. There certainly are protections because of the work we have done in the last couple of years. There are protections in place for Minnesotans that are not in place for people in other states. However, as we have said, there is work done by the CFPB that we cannot take on. And as also was mentioned, there are ways in which Minnesotans can be scammed or taken advantage of that they may not even know that is happening to them. And so, folks can submit complaints to the Attorney General's office, and they handle those. But if they don't know that they've been taken advantage of, that's going to continue, and we don't have the ability to step into that like the CFPB does.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I would add to on student loan borrowers, very proud that we gave the Attorney General that ability to enforce and go after those bad actors that individuals can sue themselves. But we want to prevent this from happening in the first place. And this is also connected to the Department of Education. So if that's dismantled, and they've been able to do a lot of work to make sure that their websites have the right information on there, that they're following the payment plans that are available to students. All of these federal agencies need to be working together. And those are two that are, clearly on the chopping block from this administration. It's really going to hurt student loan borrowers.
Critics of the CFPB say, it's a redundant government entity because there's the FTC, there's the FDIC. Anybody want to take that on?
It is absolutely false that the CFPB is in any way redundant. Before the CFPB, there were numerous federal agencies that had responsibility for consumer financial protection. But all of them had other responsibilities as well. Safety and soundness, prudential. This is to make sure they got enough money, they got enough capital behind them. And there were different agencies that did different things. But what we found is then when everybody's responsible, nobody is. And the consumers were the last ones to be thought of in some of this, some of the regulatory action. So the design is to consolidate consumer protection at the CFPB. So there really is no duplication of effort. They have responsibility and jurisdiction that only they can discharge, that nobody else can. We would be preempted if we tried to do it. And we would be, our case would be dismissed in court because we would be essentially trying to regulate and enforce laws that we're not authorized to enforce. So it really does leave a gap if they're not able to operate. So thank you.
I was reading the amicus brief that I believe you signed on to today.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about the impact on the case with Strategic Financial Solutions or any other cases that you guys have where the dismantling of a CFPB may have an impact.
Well, we do we sign on certain cases with the CFPB, just because, and the fact is that they're the ones who are pulling the heavy oar on those cases. They're the ones who have staff that can help do the vast document review that needs to be done. So our case is still alive, but our wherewithal to pursue the case has been damaged. And so we're gonna do the best we can, but we got into the case with the idea that the federal government through the CFPB would be one of the co-plaintiffs, and now they're simply not. So that puts all the people whose rights that we're trying to protect with that lawsuit in jeopardy. Thank you.
Question for you, Attorney General. The House Republicans are bringing forward a bill today, the transparency bill. Have you put out any?
If I could just say, I'm more than happy to talk about that.
Sure.
If, with your permission, could we just sort of wrap up the CFPB conversation,
sure,
and then I'm more than happy to talk.
Sure.
Is that?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Any more CFPB questions?
I wonder if one of you or multiple of you could speak to, does this change the course of the legislative session for you, knowing that the CFPB could go away? Do you need to do things differently at the state legislative level to bulk up protections for Minnesotans?
Well, at some point in the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, we will be seeing the governor's budget for Commerce and Consumer Protection. It's not a big part of the government. It's not the Department of Education or anything. But it certainly seems to me that the resources we give to that area have heightened in importance in the last 3 weeks. We don't have a lot of money to spend this session. I think everyone will be looking at cuts, but I will be particularly defensive of our consumer protection audits and agencies. Any other questions on CFPB? And then I'm going to turn it over to the AG. All right, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Well, all right. What do we got?
No, it's okay. We had
some more
questions.
Happy to help anybody.
Just wondering if you can respond to the House legislation that's coming to the floor today that affects data that would become public in your office.
Well, it's a bad bill. And it's a bad bill because it will inhibit our ability to protect Minnesotans. One of the things that it does and why it's just flat out bad policy is because it would significantly alter the classification of large amounts of data the Attorney General holds. This includes data from and about corporations, nonprofits, state agencies, and other entities that the office collects when investigating violations of state and federal law. This data includes confidential trade secrets of major multinational corporations that would be required to be disclosed under the House File 20, that could end up in the hands of competitors. So actually it is a threat to business operations and outside of the normal course of the way we do business. And by the way, every other state in the in the United States does business. Another problem is that HF 20 would also inhibit the office's ability to work with other state attorney general's offices on a wide range of consumer protection matters because we could not guarantee that confidential data and other information that they share with us would be protected from the public disclosure in Minnesota under HF 20. So our ability to work across state lines and multi-state litigation has produced great benefits for the people of the state of Minnesota. I could just name, multi-state litigation that we've done, whether it's the opioid litigation, Volkswagen litigation, multiple cases the cases we're doing on with Meta, TikTok right now, they would put us in a position to get data that then could end up in the hands, data that we get from other states could end up in the hands of the defendants. And that certainly would undermine our ability to work with other states. And other states, I think, would say, you know, Minnesota, we can't work with you because your law means that our data could be exposed. And that would be to our distinct disadvantage. I mean, I'd like you to imagine, what would it mean if we had to only do opioid cases by ourselves? It would desperately hamper our ability to hold people accountable, and the money that we've brought back to Minnesota, I think about $565 million, it would be a significantly lesser amount because we couldn't bring to bear the resources of all the states because we would be the odd one out. So it's bad, also bad politics. You might know that this whole thing springs from energy policy advocates, cynically the same acronym as EPA, you know, Energy Policy Advocates versus Ellison. And it essentially, this is a fossil fuel industry front group. And they routinely litigate against states and make baseless claims against public law offices like the Minnesota Attorney General's office. And the EPA claimed in its lawsuit that the office had made that had improperly withheld data that it had requested in its effort to try to discredit the state's legal efforts on climate change and holding fossil fuel industry accountable. So we, as many people know, we're suing ExxonMobil, suing the American Petroleum Institute. And so these fossil fuel front groups litigate us, try to get data from us to try to undermine our ability to protect the consumer. And they brought this case to court, and the majority found that our position was the correct one, was the right one. And so this bill basically is tracks the dissent, the losing position, thereby implying that the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota didn't know what it was doing when it made the right decision to protect our data. And then I'll just say that, sadly, some of the language has been unfortunate. I have to say that some well-intentioned advocates have represented in the committee and suggested that we haven't been transparent, but we are a law office, and we are imbued with the same privilege that any other law office has in the area of client attorney-client privilege and with work product privilege. That's the law business. What they want to do is somehow claim that we're not giving them the data that they're entitled to, but we're not a regular agency. We are a law office. So and law firms and all across our country and the state of Minnesota know that these sorts of privileges are important and for the operation of law. We do disclose all types of data all the time. We're happy to do it. But certain things we don't have to and historically have not had to disclose, as the Supreme Court found. So this is bad legislation motivated by the fossil fuel industry. And I just think it's really sad that any Minnesota state legislator would allow themselves to be a tool of an industry that is polluting and disregarding the rights of all Minnesotans to breathe free and live in a environment where at least the industry has to be honest with all of us about their actions to that have contributed to climate change. Again, we're not suing ExxonMobil for climate change. We're suing them because they lied about climate change, in much the same way that we didn't sue the big tobacco industry because of cancer. We sued them because they lied about the effects of their product on people's lungs. So that's what I got to say about it.
If I may just ask one clarifying question. You're saying that the way that this bill is tooled to just keep it, you know, explicitly to individuals would allow any sort of entity that you are suing to seek under the Data Practices Act information related to your case against them?
Yeah, and what if a lot of cases, almost no cases, are strictly individuals. Some of them involve companies. Some of the individuals are LLCs, which are individuals but actually have this corporate entity. I mean, imagine this. Here's the scenario that worries me that this bill could cause. Somebody organizes an LLC, is raising chickens that they're given by or that they're contracted to raise by a large poultry outfit. So this farmer gets these chickens, when they're small or in the embryonic stage, raises them until they're ready for market. Imagine this person feeling that they're not getting treated fairly, but now they know because of this bill that if they do call the AG's office, that could get back to the company that they contract with thereby, and then there could be retaliation. So it is important for us to be able to retain the data in the way that every other state gets to retain it and that we have historically been able to retain it. And remember, it is the minority position that HF 20 tracks with. The majority in the Supreme Court said that the way we handle the data is the legal way to handle the data. Thank you, guys.
Can I ask one more question unrelated?
Yeah.
In Minnesota, have you heard from any of them?
I've had a number of calls, but I haven't had to talk to them yet, so I'm not really prepared to talk about that yet. But we've been in touch with some folks, so I'll when we got more to tell you, we'll let you know. Thanks, everybody.